Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
I invite us to say words of chalice lighting. We light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the energy of action as we gather together in a circle of community. Hearing the words of and the reference of Steve to my talk last year on virtual spirituality makes me want to say this morning what a lucky thing it is for us to be here in real spirituality. And this is why we come, to find, we know that we can, in this place, depend upon ourselves being able to be who we are, to be the real person that we would like to be and are at present. the chalice that we let is a symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, as we said in our lighting. May it be a flame to symbolize the larger reality in which all of us wish to find our part in, which we celebrate in this service this morning. I invite us to join together in a short time of silence, of reflection, of meditation, acknowledging that in our world today there is much that is artificial and not real, cherishing that this is a moment where we can open to that depth of what is most real for us, acknowledging that in such an opening many things come to our sight. We witness trouble in the world, perhaps trouble in our own lives. We also, if we open, may we witness to our ability to love and to care and be concerned, and even further opening our hearts to that deep source, very real within us, which leads us to strive to be more open, to care as we are able, and to enjoy as we can in this world. Let us remember all of those who are particularly suffering. Let us remember the earth itself in the Amazon and Iceland. And all those people, may we remember around us, who are doing all they can to be considerate of each other and our planet. Let us be together in a short time of silence. May the opening of our hearts be a welcome to the way we can be more here and fully alive in our world. So be it. Amen. My kind of religion begets a revolution. It does more than recycle causes, allow the formerly oppressed to assume the role of new oppressors, or promise the comfort of vision without the daring required for accomplishment. My kind of religion requires a rootedness that underlies every division and assures a third side to every issue, which is that of our fundamental unity. Today, as we all know, we are full of divisions in our country and around the world. Whenever our country undergoes a political tsunami, the waves roil our Unitarian Universalist shores. Because we UUs are committed, as our second principle states, to justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. So we naturally are mindful of the impact of what is around us. Throughout my ministry, I have witnessed many attempts to overcome divisions, some successful and some not so. When I candidated to be the minister of my first congregation, which was quite conservative, the civil rights movement was dividing our society, and members of the search committee questioned my active membership in the NAACP. And in this case, they hired me. I guess that was a gain for them. It was for me. Then political divisions arose over the Vietnam War. A personal friend of mine and Roman Catholic priest, the Reverend Jim Harney, served prison time as one of the infamous Milwaukee 13. Jim was inspired by his friend Daniel Berrigan to break into the Selective Service Office of the U.S. in Milwaukee and destroy draft files. I organized a demonstration in North Weymouth, Massachusetts, to witness to the conscientiousness of his act, if not necessarily its particularity. As a result, I was fired from my first Universalist Church of North Weymouth, Massachusetts. That was a loser. But I think it may have been a gainer for my faith. To the credit of Unitarian Universalism, my foremost supporter was a commander at the Boston Army Base. Ted adamantly supported the war in Vietnam, but he also adamantly supported my freedom as a Unitarian Universalist minister, not only to speak from my conscience, but to act conscientiously. His name was Ted Popolnicki, and I want to honor him at this moment by lifting up his name. To me, he is a UU saint who exemplifies at the highest level our value of free expression. We UUs have also experienced our cultural wars. In the early 2000s, I served as a consultant minister for the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Rockland County, New York, where members were divided on whether or not they should apply to the UUA, that's our parent organization for guests who are with us this morning, to become certified as a welcoming congregation, which meant advocating specifically welcoming for gay men and women. A number of members argued that this certification was unnecessary because they said we were already known to welcome all people. Does this phrase sound a little familiar? I'm most proud that during that time I was able to encourage members to vote unanimously, despite the failure of two previous attempts for certification. And I believe we accomplished this vote because of our ability to deeply listen to one another beforehand and to personally get to know each other. Then my mind takes me back a bit to the late 60s, to the times of black empowerment in our Unitarian Universalist Association. At that time, I served as associate minister of the First Unitarian Church of Brooklyn. Black members of the Unitarian Universalist Association had formed an independent group within the UUA to promote black empowerment, both within the UUA and outside, which they named the Black Affairs Council. Are any of you familiar with that part of our history? Ah, yes. Well, you remember it, I'm sure, with intensity. My senior minister, the Reverend Don McKinney, was, if my memory is correct, the only white member of BAC, B-A-C, as it was called, and he and I were very active. But shortly after the arising of BAC, other UUs, inspired by the Reverend Donald Harrington, then minister of the Community Church of New York, incidentally, a church which I was fortunate to speak at even last summer, organized an alternative anti-racism group. Community Church had been successfully integrated for many years, and many of its members saw the Black Affairs Council as retrograde, antagonistic to their accomplishment, at best unneeded and at worst a separatist movement. They named their anti-racism movement BAWA, Black and White Action. The Black Affairs Council, through many protest actions, produced much dissension within our movement, and eventually, though, persuaded the UUA Board of Trustees to allot several million dollars to further their work. However, a few years later, the UUA faced a financial crisis and reneged on a substantial portion of its allotment. The UUA board announced this abnegation at the 1969 UU General Assembly meeting, which was held in Boston, and in protest, about 300 of us delegates walked out and held an alternative General Assembly at Arlington Street Church across the Common. We had little ability to compassionately communicate at that time among ourselves, and we had no Truth and Reconciliation Commission to help us heal. And as a result, many of our former Black members never returned. Though we have confronted many divisions, a few of which I have mentioned, some over race and some over gender, we have, I think, neatly avoided the most basic issue of all, and that is one of economic class. I wonder why. I think it may be because it is just too raw with us. It touches us very personally because we, as an association, are of the economic elite. Dr. Karen Gaffney recently wrote a book she calls Dismantling the Racism Machine and notes that the earlier settlers at Jamestown did not distinguish the slaves they bought from the Portuguese from the indentured servants they bought from England. There really was, at that early stage, no racism. But after Bacon's Rebellion, the British realized that because they were far outnumbered, they were in jeopardy. And so they began fomenting racial division by granting special favors to the whites and denying them to the blacks, according to the very ancient rule of divide and conquer, thus assuring an unchallenged authority and a crisis which has gripped us to today. Gaffney documents how economic powers do continue to use this strategy and leave us today with 1% of the top 10% of the wealthy citizens of our country, mainly white males, dominating, sustaining their position by profiting by distracting our attention to the social divisions of race, gender, and culture. So when the Occupy Wall Street movement began in 2011, I found myself frequently at Zuccotti Park in New York. But it's always easier to march and picket in somebody else's hometown. So I organized an Occupy Wall Street in Morristown, and I'm still appreciative of those who went with me on to participate in that movement. On one occasion, we decided to picket the local branch of Bank of America. As much as I opposed Bank of America's policies, which denied our affirmation of justice and equity in human relations, I also wanted to affirm the other half of our principle, compassion in human relations. After all, I knew the tellers and the manager. So as others gathered on South Street, I went inside to speak to the manager about what we were protesting. I explained to her that I recognized that the policies we were protesting were probably not set by her, but at the same time, this particular branch of Bank of America stood for the institutional policies that we opposed in the interest of justice and equity. I also spoke to the tellers to let them know that our protest was not personal. For all I know, they might even feel as I did, but have been caught in the system. Following that demonstration, I had a more than usual feeling of satisfaction, more than those days of during the Black Affairs Council work for empowerment, more even than my stand against the Vietnam War. I had a feeling of doing what I knew to be right because I knew I'd fortunately been able to stand up for my belief in justice and equity, but also exercise compassion. Too often, it is very easy to minimize the second half of our Unitarian Universalist principle. And one of the things that seems to get in the way of ours today is the easiness of it is of mistaking our intent from our impact. We must remind ourselves that whatever we may intend to do may have impactful circumstances for others. At the same time, we might remind ourselves that if we are emotionally hurt by someone else, or even possibly physically injured, the way we feel is not that person's responsibility. The way we feel and deal with what has happened is ours. What has happened to us are the triggers of how we might behave, but they're not the determinant. We can even, as we all know, have the experience sometimes of being cursed by someone, perhaps on the highway, and feeling quite enraged. But maybe on a very good day, not feel enraged, but feel really sad that he has to be in such a hurry, or she. If we can learn to take charge of our reactions to triggering, we can become quite powerful. I personally had an experience that conflated intent and impact that I would like to share with you. And it was at, of all places, a Buddhist retreat center where we were focused on compassionate communication. At the outset of the seminar, the leader requested that we observe two protocols. One was the usual one at such retreats, which was to observe what is called noble silence at all times, except during specific discussions. The second, building on the impact recently of the Me Too movement, was to refrain from expressing our connection or appreciation to anyone who might be for whom we might very much feel empathy, by forms of touch, for example, by hugging, without that person's explicit permission. Now, in this particular retreat, each of us contributed some kind of work, and mine was to help wash dishes. The dining room steward instructed us, that is, dishwashers, that when the time came to line up for a meal, what we would do would be to bow to the person in front of us, who would then allow us to pass and move to the front of the line so that we would have time to be in early and finish our meal before our job began. On this particular occasion, I approached the doorway to the dining room, and it was blocked by a woman of color who was facing away from me. I lightly tapped her on the shoulder to get her attention, then bowed, and then moved past her to the front of the line. Suddenly, I was called out of the dining room by the leader of the workshop, who angrily admonished me. He accused me of violating our covenant by, in his words, touching an Afro-American woman without her permission. He dismissed my intent and focused only on its impact. I apologized and asked if I could go apologize to this particular woman, but he deferred. During the retreat, I reflected upon this incident. At the retreat's closing, we were all asked to offer some closing words. I told everyone there that I realized I had hurt a woman, I never knew her name, and though it was not my intent, I realized that my action had had a hurtful impact. I declared that I was sorry for hurting her and wanted to hold her in my meditations of loving kindness and to wish her well. I felt very good about what I had said. I had no need to apologize for my intention. According to the Buddha, actually, it is our intentions that are all important to determining how we live. It is, in fact, in the teachings from the Buddha, exactly what creates our karma. Nor did I accept responsibility for her feeling hurt. That was the way she interpreted the action and the way she reacted. Yet we did interact, and I wished for her a future of healing and love. This experience of having been called out, this is the word that is often used in our culture today, and really shamed, helped me to understand what has become a major brouhaha at our recent UU General Assembly in Spokane, Washington. Much of the dissension and confusion there concerned calling out. It concerned what is called virtue signaling, which you can, if you don't know the expression, can accurately guess what that would be. Name-calling, character assassination, and identity division. One of our ministers there, the Reverend Ted Eckloff, distributed a book he had written, which he called the Gadfly Papers, to all of the delegates, in which he warned against a trend of he saw within our Unitarian Universalist movement of what has come to be called safetyism, developing a culture where people are afraid to speak out and be truthful about what they feel and think. He took some of his inspiration from a recent book by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt, which is called The Coddling of the American Mind. I wasn't at the GA, so I don't feel qualified to report on exactly what happened there. I think, perhaps, from what I've read, a very good case could be made against the inappropriate way in which the Reverend Eckloff distributed his book. But I will say that last week I was dismayed to receive a copy of a letter of censure written to him by the leadership of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. It said, as the leadership of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, we are writing this letter of censure regarding the content and the matter of distribution at the General Assembly of your book, The Gadfly Papers. The content of your book has caused great psychological, spiritual, and emotional damage for many individuals and communities within our faith. Because of this widespread impact, we are making this censure public and distributing it to all members of the UUMA. And the authors continued with some rather vacuous and spurious words about their love and caring. I couldn't help, when I received that letter, but wonder, would Ted Popielnicki, now alive, be a Unitarian Universalist if he knew that one of the ministers in the association to which he was so dedicated and had taken so much care to protect his freedom of speech despite his vulnerable position as a commander in the army, knowing this minister, a minister, was censured for expressing his opinion? My kind of religion is not there. It probes a radical connectedness, an effort to know and to understand another, upon which I believe is the very foundation of our Unitarian Universalist movement, and without which we will never be able to make the changes we want, both within and without. My religion has come to promote me doing a kind of work I might call bifocal activism. That is, on the one hand, recognizing that it is all important to focus on what is immediate and particular and to act in the present, and to recognizing that there is a time when any of us who are discovering new permission to be who we are and to be real needs to separate. And the other side of my activism is to understand that it is equally necessary to remain aware of the context and the larger picture in which we live, that we are all human beings with the same need to be happy, trying to do what we can to our best of ability, living with one ecology upon one earth. And so I'm learning to fight and speak up for two causes, one local and one universal, one that affirms our uniqueness and the special identity of groups to which we belong and to which we are oftentimes assigned by prejudice. The other is to affirm our universal belonging and celebrate our common existence upon one earth and the oneness which, from a deeper sense, we have all emerged. This is a tall order. I find myself ill prepared. Unfortunately, I learned a lot about how to pick it before I learned how to talk and to listen. I learned how to complain before I learned how to communicate, how to express my feelings of anger and hurt before I learned how to empathize and realize what the other person might be feeling. And I learned how to react before I learned how to hold still, own my own feelings, and then try to act as best I can. So I feel a need to begin a revolution of relatedness, to teach myself and help anyone I know to relate to both our uniqueness and our wholeness, to acknowledge that we live in a wholeness, in a community that is whole and values each part. That is our nature as a social beings. And to do what we can to learn a good way of talking and listening to each other, which is why, when I was here before, I mentioned to you the possibility of one such organization, which is very encouraging, to doing just that kind of work in New Jersey and all across the country, which is called Better Angels, in which members of both red and persuasions and blue persuasions sit down with each other and learn to understand the other. Perhaps not eventuating in a lot of change directly, but beginning a respect that can lead to change. Another is such opportunity is the process called variously nonviolent communication, compassionate communication. Some people call it resonant communication. It's a way of learning how it is truly possible for each of us to have our particular needs met by the way we frame our conversation and our direct expression. At the very same time, we can learn, can be empathetic and appreciative of the other person to whom we are talking and who is trying to do exactly the same thing, to have his or her needs met. I invite you to pursue, in whatever might be your particular manner, the cause of a religion of deep relatedness, which is able to acknowledge our particularity and our wholeness at the same time. Poet Edwin Markham inspires me in a very little poem he wrote once, which he called Outwitted. The poem is, "He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, a rebel, a thing to flout. But love had I, and the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. May we draw our circle large. So be it. Amen." I invite you to join with me in our closing words as we extinguish the chalice. We extinguish the flame, but may the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the energy of action burn bright in our hearts until we are together again. May we leave this place knowing that it is possible for us to build a land where justice flows down like waters and where there is peace. May we dedicate each in our own way ourselves to such a cause. May we leave here strengthened by our community's fellowship and hope. May we leave in love to our work in the world. So be it. Amen. Blessed be.